Hi there, Jonathan here. The following talk is offered freely to ensure that no one is ever denied access to these practices and to these teachings. If you feel inspired to make a donation to support this offering, you can go to my website where you can also sign up for a monthly newsletter designed to support you in your practice. That's at www.jonathanfaust.com. Thank you and enjoy. So September is going to be a writing retreat for me. And one of my intentions is to maybe come up with some new jokes, because for this topic, for about the Buddhist personality types, the only story I could come up with was actually one of my favorites, but I know I've shared this before. There are three main personality types and lots of subtypes and so forth, but this story really kind of illustrates two of the basic types. One is the one that sort of leans toward, yes, let's do it. And the other one, which is, wait a minute, I'm not so sure. And the story is of these two fellows who are walking their dogs in a park. One of them has a Doberman Pinscher. The other has a Chihuahua. And they had a great walk hiking around, and the friend with the Doberman says, hey, what do you say we get a cappuccino? There's a cafe right across the street, across the park. And his friend with the Chihuahua says, well, no, we can't. There are no dogs allowed. You know, haven't you seen the sign? You walk by there every day. And his friend says, oh, come on, we can do it. So just wait here and do what I do. And so this fellow with the Doberman puts on his sunglasses. He crosses the street. He walks up to the maitre d' and says, I'd like a table. And the maitre d' says, I'm sorry, we don't allow dogs. And he said, well, this is a seeing eye dog. And the maitre d' goes, I didn't know they had Doberman Pinschers as seeing eye dogs. I said, well, it's an experiment, but, you know, it's working pretty well. The maitre d' kind of rolls his eyes and says, all right, you know, over in the corner. So his friend with the Chihuahua is on the other side of the street, just dying inside. But, you know, he feels he's got to do what he has to do, so he puts on his sunglasses and walks up to the maitre d' and says, there's like a table. And the maitre d' says, I'm sorry, sir, we do not allow dogs. And the guy says, well, this is a seeing eye dog. And the maitre d' says, sir, a Chihuahua? And the guy says, what? You mean they gave me a Chihuahua? So we often do little pop quizzes here. And this is actually an adaptation from a little quiz from Tricycle Magazine, which is kind of a magazine on Buddhist studies and so forth. So there are a number of questions that may help you to begin to identify kind of your natural personality structure. So here's the first one. Three options. There are three main types. When you go to the beach, the first thing you say is, A, the water looks great, or B, have there been any shark attacks reported recently? Or three, I forgot my swimsuit again. When a friend suggests an activity, your automatic response is, that's the best idea I've ever heard. Let's do it right now. Or is it B, that's completely lame. Or C, well, I guess if you want to. How would you answer this one? People would be happier if, A, they took time to enjoy life. People don't focus on the positive side of things enough. Or B, people would be happier if they lived better lives. How can you be happy if you're not doing what's right? Or C, people would be happier if they slowed down. I don't understand why people feel like they have to take on so many responsibilities. At dinner time, I think, A, wow, this looks great. I wonder if there's more. Or B, is there gluten in this? Or C, is it dinner time already? What happened to the day? Your friend's affectionate nickname for me is A, Sparky, B, Eeyore, or C, Space Cadet. What most people appreciate about me is A, my fun-loving nature, B, my penetrating intellect, or C, my easygoing, accepting nature. And finally, when things aren't going your way, you figure A, they'll improve as soon as you get that one thing you want, or B, it's someone else's fault and you should help them see why they're wrong, or C, could you repeat the question? I forget what you were talking about. So you may sense that there are three main qualities that shape our personalities, and they shape our perception of the world. And from the kind of the core of Buddhist philosophy, they're kind of described as greed, kind of the wanting mind, aversion, which is sort of the judging mind, and delusion, which is kind of the confused mind. And they tend to show up as personality traits, depending on your conditioning. And these really are not pejorative. These elements exist inside all of us. And you'll notice that when you are under fear or stress, you may have a tendency to go toward one of these, again, depending on your conditioning. And each type also has its opportunities for transcendence. And the way that you can see them, of course, is through non-judging awareness, through this practice of meditation, to recognize when they arise and to explore the skillful means on how to work with these traits when they arise. So I'll be talking about the greed type and the aversive type and the deluded type, and then finally, no type, the transcendent self, what it's like to be free of all of these traits. So one of my very, very best friends in the world, who lives in Denver, we met when we were 19 in college. I went on to live in an ashram and had a celibacy vow and a poverty vow and ate macrobiotic. And he went on for a career in sales and business and has 7 children. So, and my friend Michael and another friend of mine, David, and I, we started going on an annual retreat every year. We started this a couple of years ago. And this last year, this summer, I went out to Denver a couple of days earlier, and then David joined us. So when Michael picked me up at the airport, we went back to his house. He said, okay, I've got a list. Here are some of the things that we could do, you know, over the next day or so. And on those lists were going to a poetry slam, a rodeo, whitewater rafting, wine tasting, a list of movies he'd made and the times we could see them, some friends that we could spend time with, and an art exhibit that he really wanted to go back and see again. So you can imagine what type he is. And he's just incredibly creative around putting stuff together. Years earlier, when I went out to visit, we went to see the movie Sideways, the one with Paul Giamatti and the wine tasting. But then we went to the movie, but then afterward he had arranged a wine tasting. So we actually had an experience after going to the movie. And last year, Tara and I were teaching in Europe, so we arranged our gathering in Paris. And so when we arrived in Paris, he had directions to all the museums. He'd already checked out the best restaurants. And the theme of that visit was Do you think we need another bottle of wine? So time with Michael is absolutely fun. I do things that I would never do on my own. And it's absolutely overstimulating. After about 3 days, I just need to kind of lie and twitch and kind of process everything I've seen and everything I've eaten and everything I drank. And there's one image when David came, and again, he's a professional foodie, so wandering around Paris with you know, two gluttons was really fantastic. But I have one image. They're both recently divorced. And here, and it's this really great photograph. We're in Paris in the afternoon with that wonderful, beautiful light, you know, walking through one of those beautiful cities, and both of these guys with their head down on their iPhone swiping through Tinder. So there's a spectrum that we have that ranges when we're in that sort of like ecstatic, creating, wanting quality of mind. There is a real capacity for ecstatic appreciation, for real deep, deep enjoyment and gratitude and sort of reveling in what's here. And then there's the extreme. That craving, wanting mind, when it gets out of balance, has to do with addiction. An inability to stop. It's oftentimes described as the hungry ghost. And you may have seen this image or heard of this image through Buddhist teachings. And the hungry ghosts are these beings that have these huge bellies and these tiny little throats and tiny little mouths. And as hard as they try to take in, they can't get enough. They're perpetually wanting more. And so, as you might sense, there's a spectrum here from this capacity for deep, ecstatic appreciation all the way to the hungry ghost, to desires that will never, ever be quite fulfilled enough. And then the question is, how do you work with this character trait when it shows up for you? One of the elements that is very, very helpful is to keep in mind the first characteristic of reality, of impermanence. That when you recognize that everything is changing, that this immersion into sensual pleasure is all temporary, that satisfying pleasures can be really wonderful, and yet this body in its own time will fall away. There is kind of the dysfunctional greed type, and that is the tendency to seek pleasure in order to avoid pain. So when you feel something uncomfortable, you'll look for some form of entertainment to pull you away from the reality of what is here. And yet, there is what we could call the enlightened greed type. And that is a quality of incredible positivity. Those who have this character quality tend to see the possibilities. While someone might look at it as a problem, they might see the good that might come out by jumping in and saying yes to it. The awakened greed type can appreciate impermanence and yet at the same time embrace this life and everything that's here. When you're caught in wanting to reflect on sickness, old age, and death, it's a very powerful practice, the heavenly messengers. because you begin to see through the illusion that these sensual pleasures will make you happy. It's not to deny them. That's the exquisite teaching. Not to deny them, but not to indulge them either. To find that middle way. So I imagine some of us might identify that might be a primary trait for you. Again, seeing the positive, that the natural saying yes to life. And at the same time, kind of the shadow side of avoiding discomfort by looking for pleasure. A good friend of mine years ago told me about a men's retreat he went to. And they divided up this men's retreat to one-day packers and five-day packers. So when it comes down to it, most people either, when you're going on a trip, you'll bring what you need for one day, or you'll bring what you need for 5 days. And he said it was, and they got the men in two different groups, and they started debating. And he said it actually turned into like a shouting match. You know, because the one-day packers were saying, you guys are so paranoid, you just need to say yes and go enjoy your life. And all the five-day packers were saying, like, whenever you need anything, who do you come to? You come to us, you know? You know, grow up, learn how to make your way through life skillfully. And I think that's a really good distinction. Are you a one-day packer or a five-day packer? So this kind of leads to a little exploration of kind of the aversive quality. After I met Tara, it seemed pretty clear that it really made sense for me to move down to D.C. And I'd been living in the mountains of western Massachusetts. And I'd always lived in the country. I'd never lived in a city before. And to give you an idea of the culture of my family and my upbringing, a number of years ago, kind of as a way of initiating a conversation with my two brothers and my sister and their families, I said, if you couldn't go to the grocery store, if it was impossible to go to the grocery store, and you had to live on what you had in your house, how long could you go? So my brother, he looked at me and he kind of closed his eyes and he said, 10 months. He said, well, no. He said, 12 if we were careful. So then I turned to my sister and my brother-in-law. And they looked at each other and they smiled and they said, a really, 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 really long time. I said, really? I said, well, just to give you an idea, since they live in the country, they said, since we were in town, yesterday we bought 40 pounds of lentils at the Indian store because they were on sale. So each member of my family has a garden, and my two brothers hunt, and they, you know, they freeze, and I don't garden because I learned early that all you have to do is hang out with gardeners, you know. You've got everything you need. I always loved what Garrison Keillor said, where, you know, this is the mythical Lake Wobegon. In the summer, people would lock their cars at night to keep other people from putting zucchini in them in the summer. So when I drove down to visit Tara, there was something happened on the road, and on 95 between Baltimore and 495, everything stopped. And so I was just parked on the highway for about 2.5 hours. Everyone was just parked. But I wasn't that worried because my car was stocked. So I had blankets, food rations, gallons of water, a medical kit, tools, a tow rope, dog bowl for my dog. And as you might guess, part of my natural inclination is toward the aversive quality. And that is, and the aversive is a little bit toward what could go wrong. kind of the opposite, anticipating what might go wrong. Now, it's easy to kind of get locked into that. When you get locked into the aversive, then you're kind of caught in the chronic anxiety. You know, the low-grade anxiety, kind of like a low-grade fever. And so the balance for aversion is to reflect on goodwill, to reflect on the good, to cultivate compassion and kindness. And again, very helpful to reflect on impermanence. So when the aversive type is really out of balance, that's when you are constantly scanning for danger. There's an inability to relax and an inability to receive. And yet, there can be sort of the enlightened or the awakened aversive type. And I've worked a lot on my anxiety. I've been very aware of my own aversive nature. And a very big distinction I found is to get really clear on what I had control over and what I didn't have control over. And that has been very, very helpful for me. A good friend of mine a number of years ago went to a seminar on like how to survive the apocalypse. And this was written by, actually, it was a book that I cannot remember the name of the book right now, but basically, what do you do if everything melts down? Is basically that's what it was all about. You know, the coming financial collapse. And so he went to this seminar and then he was sort of telling me all the things you can do, you know, like, well, you need to make sure you've got food, you make sure you need to have water, but then once you have your stuff, then you have to be really aware of protecting it. And so then you need to have a community. And he was really kind of all pretty caught up in this. And at one point I said, excuse me, but do you think you're not going to die at some point? And he kind of stopped. He said, wow, you know, you're right. And it actually really helped them to relax. So the aversive type has a tendency, again, to be caught in that chronic anxiety, but it can also be caught in chronic judgment. The aversive type can be very much caught in a sense of like, I'm seeing things clearly and the rest of the world is not. And it's very, very helpful for the aversive type to stop and ask, well, what am I believing? And is what I'm believing true? It can be very, very helpful. Now, when you look at these personality types, this is relatively simplistic because some of us have a tendency toward the greed type. You know, we're sort of the yes, we want the next thing, we kind of have to have it. It's the, the FOMO, the fear of missing out. That's got a really high, really, really wonderful quality to it. Really, really positive. But again, it can have that constant, it's not enough, I need more. And in the aversive type, it can be very self-protective. But aversive types also have much more of a sense of clear seeing. They tend to look at, okay, here's the problem. What are the steps I need to make it happen? So there's some excellent qualities that emerge from that. And what I've found for myself is that when I'm in anxiety, I go toward the aversive. I tend to go toward self-protection and sensing what could possibly go wrong and then strategizing how I might survive. But as soon as I feel safe, well, then it's a big yes. I want to do the next thing, whatever that may be. So if it could be that you're noticing that you have tendencies in each of these, but if you can't really make up your mind which one you are, well, then you may be the third type, which is deluded. There's an article about these three types. And the opening of the article, if you Google, it's one of the top one that comes up, is this woman is visiting with a friend, and her friend said, oh, there she was loading the dishwasher. And her friend said, oh, you know, when it comes to the personality types, you must be the deluded type. They were loading the dishwasher together. And then she looked at the dishwasher, and her friend's side of the dishwasher, everything was lined up really, really neat, maximized for efficiency. Her side of the dishwasher, things were just put in completely at random. I see a few people smiling and nodding. So if you load the dishwasher like it's origami, you may be the aversive. And if you do it more happenstance, it could be a little diluted. The deluded type is also sometimes described as the confused type. If you know someone who's a daydreamer, you know, they have lots of ideas, but maybe they're not really good at executing them. That can be a little more of the deluded type. And the interesting thing about delusion is, as I often say, delusion is believing something's true when it isn't, and believing something isn't true when it is. So again, part of the antidote to confusion is to cultivate clear seeing, to look closely at what is real, to train yourself to see what's real. And again, this is helpful with a reflection on the three characteristics of reality, to see into the nature of impermanence, to see into the nature of suffering, to look closely at what you're holding on to recognize that where you're holding on, there's suffering, where you can let go, there's freedom. And to look closely at that third characteristic of reality, which is the nature of the true self. To recognize that there's a conditioned self, but there's also something that is beyond the conditioned self. There is something called dependent origination, which is a fascinating view of how we actually create our reality. And at some point, I'm going to do a series of talks on this, because these are the 12 steps that we automatically go through that sort of reinforce the reality that we're looking at. And when you look very, very closely at them, you can begin to see that how much of what you view through life is just through this filter of concepts. But there's actually an experience of life that is beyond concepts. But when we get sort of caught in the mind, we get trapped by doubt. So that's one of the characteristics of the deluded type or the confused type, is that you're paralyzed by doubt. I remember talking with somebody who said, I have so much trouble in an argument because they automatically get the other person's point of view. You know, I'm a terrible mediator because what everyone says makes sense to me. And again, that's not a bad thing. But sometimes you can lose your point of balance. You can lose your center. So those, when we're lost in doubt, we can get a little bit disassociated. And we tend to look for external guidance when we're lost in confusion. And of course, there are so many systems out there to say, well, let me tell you the right way to think. Let me show you the best path or the best political system that you should take. And it's very easy to hand our power over and say, okay, tell me what to think and then I'll feel safe. So that can be a characteristic of the deluded type. And of course, just as Each of these types can be pushed to an extreme. The greed type can move toward addiction. The aversive type can get locked into hatred and into judgment. The deluded type can become kind of separated from reality. Howard Hughes is a kind of that classic example of this brilliant mind who, not only due to perhaps his own brain chemistry, but he was surrounded by people who simply agreed with whatever he said, and he never had any like reality. So he became more and more kind of caught in his own delusional world. A friend of mine wrote me a while back, and as he was meditating, he said, I just caught myself deep in a fantasy about having a conversation with someone about how much I'm living in the moment. But just as there can be this sort of extreme caught in delusion type, there's a positive quality to it as well. If nothing else, the deluded types are really fun to bring to a party, because there's kind of a big yes. But there's a spaciousness that comes. While there can be doubt, there can also be possibility and openness to possibility. Part of the balance for the deluded type is to, again, not only to see clearly, but to look clearly at the nature of thought. When we're lost in delusion, quite often we're lost in our own beliefs. And to have the clarity of mind to ask yourself, what story am I believing right now? It's tremendously helpful. And as I'd like to say, for many people, when they go deep into meditation, or if they're at a meditation retreat, quite often there'll be this sense of like, I don't have to believe every thought. That when I'm caught in a story, I can actually ask myself, what's the core belief? Is it true? Who am I without that belief? It can be a very powerful mirror to find freedom where there can be all kinds of confusion. Here's something from the master Dogen. When you ride in a boat and watch the shore, you might assume that the shore is moving. But when you keep your eyes closely on the boat, you can see that the boat moves. Similarly, if you examine many things with a confused mind, you might suppose that your mind and nature are permanent. But when you practice intimately and return to where you are, it will be clear that there is nothing that has an unchanging self. So these three tendencies of the mind, if we're not aware of them, your life will be run by these three qualities. You will be automatically, unconsciously driven by that force of wanting and greed, never being satisfied, or you'll be perpetually caught in aversion and judgment, self-protection, or you'll be caught perpetually in confusion with an inability to see clearly into the nature of reality. And it's helpful to notice where you go when you're under stress. Where you go when you're really under the gun? Do you look to pleasure to avoid the discomfort? Do you focus on the negative and then obsess on it? Or do you disassociate or lose power or look for some authority to guide you? This is conditioning that we all share. And so that leads to, really, where's the freedom in all of this? The practice seems to be always pointing back toward self-observation without judgment. The capacity to recognize in the moment what is here. And there's a beautiful articulation of the middle way in this practice, of not too tight, not too loose. And the more you slow down, you can really begin to sense the subtlety of those energies. When the mind moves toward wanting, when it moves toward aversion, when it moves into confusion. So this image of walking a tightrope came to mind as I was reflecting on this. And so I looked it up, and here's a little quote. And because it's from the internet, you know it's correct. It says, "The key to balancing on a tightrope is to lower the body's center of gravity toward the wire. At the same time, a tightrope walker has to remember that the wire itself tends to rotate. Each step along the cable invites it to spin underfoot, potentially throwing the walker off balance." And that's kind of how life is. Sort of step by step, is constantly shifting and constantly moving. And the practice is self-observation without judgment. You know, we speak of the four foundations of awareness, that in any given moment when you're meditating, the first foundation is the pure energetic experience of here and now, neither good nor bad. It's just pure here and now. What arises from here is called Vedana, that the experience in any millisecond, without you being aware of it, your mind will interpret as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And then again, without even being aware of it, you react. And when you go into reaction, then you go up into thought forms, you go into the emotional body, you go into the whole reaction to whatever's arising in any given moment. The fourth foundation is beginning to recognize the categories of the thoughts and the categories of the emotions as you begin to see more clearly into the phenomena that arises. And so that's why the practice of meditation is, no matter where you are, come back to the here and now. Come back to this breath. Come back and experience the sound vibrations in this moment. That is a very powerful kind of reboot. And remarkable, magical things arise when you do that. Oftentimes, it may not be a conscious insight of, oh, now I see that story of that event that occurred and how I've habitually reacted to it and the beliefs that have come out of that. Sometimes there are cognitive insights. A lot of times it's simply coming back to center again and again and again. And again, I mentioned my tendency is toward the aversive, you know, toward worry, toward anxiety, toward scanning for what could go wrong. But I recall doing a month-long retreat, and I know I had mentioned this in the past, and it was the second month-long silent retreat I'd done, and I didn't get any fantastical insights that came away from that. But I noticed, this was a few months later, I had sensed it, but it was a little below the conscious line of awareness, but my wife said to me, she said, "You know, you are less anxious." And I realized that was true. And while I had no huge insights around it, I deeply, deeply trust that practice of coming back and coming back and coming back somehow helped me lower my center of gravity a little bit closer toward that tightrope that I walk. And so the question becomes, who are you in the absence of wanting? And who are you in the absence of judging? And who are you in the absence of confusion? We all have access to that, and we've all touched into those places. Because when those three qualities of mind are not present, there's something that's there. It's a quality of presence, a quality of being, a quality of luminosity that we all know because we've all tasted that at different times. Why don't we close with a little meditation? We'll do a little reflection on this stuff. As you close your eyes, you might draw your attention into the experience of your body breathing. And in these final minutes, you might reflect on how these forces play through your personality. This energy of desire, of wanting. Sensing both the shadow of the hungry ghost, as well as the light, a quality of positivity, a quality of seeing possibilities, a quality of saying yes. And sensing this energy of aversion, the shadow being anxiety, and self-protection, and judgment, blame, as well as the quality of wise discernment, wise discrimination. And sensing this quality of delusion or confusion, the times when you're lost, paralyzed by doubt. As well as the quality of faith. The quality of spaciousness. And you might sense how each of these qualities can be acknowledged and seen clearly for what they are when you are cultivating non-judging awareness. And sensing these qualities that can arise of optimism toward life. Of wise discrimination and seeing clearly. And we'll close with a short poem. It's called Notice. It speaks about the power of embracing impermanence as a teacher. This evening, the sturdy Levi's I wore every day for over a year, and which seemed to the end in perfect condition, suddenly tore. How or why, I don't know, but there it was, a big rip at the crotch. A month ago, my friend Nick walked off a racquetball court, showered, got into his street clothes, and halfway home collapsed and died. Take heed, you who hear this, and drop to your knees now and again, like the poet Christopher Smart, and kiss the earth, and be joyful, and make much of your time, and be kindly to everyone, even to those who do not deserve it. For although you may not believe it will happen, you too will one day be gone. I, whose Levi's ripped at the crotch for no reason, assure you that such is the case. Pass it on. And when you're ready, you can deepen your breath. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Thanks for your kind attention. May you and your multiple personalities have a great evening. A few quick announcements before we go. Jen and Jeff have a program on mindful self-compassion. There's a flyer in the back. It's really worth checking out. IMCW is having a 20-year anniversary party on October 28th. I'll send some information out if you're interested in that. This coming month, I'm going to be away. Next week, we have no class. It's Labor Day. But then we'll have Hugh Byrne and Shell Fisher and Mary Vandeventer back as well.